in this segment, we're going to spend some time on America's foreign affairs as we prepare for a change in the guard down in D.C. While China remains a beneficiary of inclusion and economic empowerment by the United States and others, their track record regarding freedom, liberty, and human rights show them to be far less worthy of the considerations that they are receiving. When President-elect Donald Trump spoke with the president of Taiwan, yeah, the fallout was quite fast and quite loud, wasn't it? That dissenting voice expressed concerns about how China would react to this attempt to connect with a true Asian democracy. My next guest is here to talk about why what President-elect Trump did has far more benefits than the critics will admit to, and how this may foreshadow a shift in America's foreign affairs. He's a Thomas L. Rhodes Fellow at the National Review Institute. Ian Tuttle, thanks for being here today, Ian.
Thanks for having me.
And your article is entitled, Why Trump's Phone Conversation with Taiwan's President is a Good Sign. Just a little backtrack for the person listening who might not be aware of the situation. What is the status of Taiwan's existence? I mean, we know they're not a member of the United Nations, and it's called the One China policy that we've been practicing since 1979 now.
Right. That's right. So you know, China and Taiwan have had a conflicted relationship since the Chinese Civil War in the mid and late 1940s, when basically the nationalist forces fled from mainland China, fleeing Mao's communist forces into the island of Taiwan, and they claimed that they were the legitimate rulers of China, all of China, dating back to 1912, when a sort of quasi-Western democratic state was established. And there's a lot of power behind that claim. Now, that debate is sort of central as to, okay, who's the legitimate ruler of China. And in 1979, the United States decided that the PRC, the regime in Beijing, the People's Republic, was the sole legitimate ruler of China. And that's the policy that we've maintained since then, cutting off official diplomatic relations with Taiwan. Now, the United States policy is ambiguous in the sense that while we are not officially pro-Taiwanese independence, we're also not officially against it. So there's sort of a studied ambiguity, and that's the reason that you don't typically have heads of the Taiwanese head of state, if you'll allow the phrase, talking to an American head of state. And then it seems like Donald Trump is at least ready to prod that consensus a little bit.
Is this such a surprise, given the tenor that Trump has taken against China all during the campaign, even before he was running for president?
Right. Yeah, I don't think it should be particularly surprising. You know, the question, of course, as always with Trump, is what did he know and when did he know it? You know, is this intentional or you know, is this a sort of intentional provocation? You know, is it part of a coherent strategy in an approach to China and Taiwan? Or was this sort of arranged by lower level people, and he was sort of a pawn in a plan he didn't quite know the full details of? It's really difficult to say, but you know, the fact that this was being negotiated by the Taiwanese government and folks in the Trump transition team and in D.C. for a long, long time prior to the conversation suggests that there are people within the administration and people influential sort of at the margins of the incoming administration, I should say, that want to see a reconfigured relationship with Taiwan. And from my point of view, I think that's a generally good thing if done with sort of caution and a final coherent plan in mind.
Going with Ian Tuttle, who for National Review on December 5th wrote the column Why Trump's Phone Conversation with Taiwan's President is a Good Sign. NationalReview.com is where you can find it. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. You mentioned the country's economies, and one thing with Taiwan is they're the fifth largest economy in Asia, one of the 20 largest economies in the world, but 40% of the Taiwanese economy is based upon what they ship out to China and Hong Kong. But then at the same time, how much of how much is China reliant on the U.S. economy, where you have this triangle going on, and Trump is just basically saying, well, you know what? The United States is going to take the top peak of this triangle and try to change things to a more politically and socially spectrum is concerned, much more even more fair treatment of Taiwan.
Yeah, so the economic relationships here are interesting, and they're one of the reasons that this relationship has to be sort of pursued cautiously if you do want to change the policy that we've been operating by for 40 years, because China can exercise significant leverage on Taiwan to get them to sort of fall into line, and basically what Taiwan is hoping to do under President Tsai Ing-wen, who was inaugurated in May, is pursue bilateral or multilateral trade agreements with other Pacific Rim countries, aiming to make themselves more independent of the Chinese economy. Because as the Chinese economy has faltered over the last couple of years, the Taiwanese economy has faltered a little bit as well. And so, if she's capable of able to do that, then you could see a Taiwan that continues in its sort of its positive economic trajectory, but with less reliance on China. And I think that's one way in which the U.S. can actually help here. I mean, we sell weapons to them, $1.8 billion in weapons, I think, last year, over the last couple of years. But there's a lot that the United States can do to help sort of move Taiwan toward economic independence, or at least more economic independence from Chinese markets.
That's the economic side of things. When we talk about politics, and what about the people power? Because as you wrote in your column, the younger voters have really no emotional, spiritual, or any type of connection with China. And does the Trump phone call with the Taiwanese president give an empowerment to the voice of dissent, which is certainly something Trump is not unfamiliar with, by the way?
Absolutely. And I think that's an important consequence. You know, I don't think I was in Taiwan not too long ago, and I don't think that folks who are sort of pro-independence or would lean toward independence are likely to overinterpret what's happening. These are people who are sort of cautious when it comes to any optimism about what the future might hold. But the ties to mainland China are rapidly disappearing. The DPP, which is the party in power now, it has been the opposition party for Taiwan's entire existence. And for the first time in the country's 60-plus-year-old history, the DPP now controls the legislature and the presidency, and the DPP and related parties are generally pro-independence parties who want to take a more aggressive stance toward China. And given the generational factors here, they're likely to continue in power, or at least be a significant force in Taiwanese politics for a long time to come. So if you're looking at sort of the political trajectory, in all likelihood, these are the types of the people with whom an American president, Secretary of State, et cetera, would be dealing with. And so, I think that smart folks looking to help promote a more independence-minded Taiwanese politics will be willing to work with the DPP to the extent that's possible.
There are some who might be surprised, some even angry about what the phone call can result in. But what Ian writes about in his December 5th column at National Review, why Trump's phone conversation with Taiwan's president is a good sign, gives you a little insight into the shape of things to come. Read more about Ian's work and the other journalists at National Review. It's nationalreview.com. Ian Tuttle, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.